This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. For those who were tuned in to the TV Wednesday night, on any of the cable news channels, they'd have seen snippets of Rachel Maddow interviewing Rudy Giuliani associate Lev Parnas. Wait, who?
I don't know him at all. Don't know what he's about. Don't know where he comes from. Know nothing about him.
He lied. I mean, we're not friends. I mean, when you say friends, I mean, me and him didn't watch football games together. We didn't eat hot dogs. But he knew exactly who we were. He knew exactly who
Parnas
I was.
Parnas told Maddow that Giuliani, Attorney General William Barr, Vice President Mike Pence, and others were all on the president's team, charged with unseating American-Ukraine Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, a move favored by Ukrainian oligarchs, in exchange for helping secure the president's seat by doing damage to Joe Biden. How we got to the point where the interests of company and country are brazenly conflated out there for most to see is the subject of my WNYC colleague Andrea Bernstein's new book called American Oligarchs: The Kushners, the Trumps, and the Marriage of Money and Power. We'll begin on a rainy night, September 1943, in the ghetto of Nowogródek, Poland, where a couple hundred survivors tunneled 300 meters to escape their Nazi captors. Among them was Ray Kushner, grandmother of Jared, and hiding in a hole in the ground of a nearby forest was his eventual grandfather, Jassel Berkowitz, a carpenter. The two made their way to Hungary, married, and then walked across and around borders, detained a few years in an Italian refugee camp, until, after strategically lying to American immigration officials about their family relations and nationality, the United States lets them in. There, Jassel Berkowitz, now called Joseph Kushner, begins to build the family fortune.
He starts by working on houses in New Jersey as a carpenter. And it is a great time to be in carpentry because there's so many houses that are being built for the returning GIs, and there's so much federal money flowing into suburbia. And he becomes a millionaire many times over through his own moxie, certainly, but also with a great deal of help from the government.
Let's talk about Friedrich Trump now. We start his story earlier, basically at the turn of the 20th century.
It's the Gilded Age. So as now, huge inequality of wealth and monopolists control the government. One of the things that's different, though, between now and then is that there was a lot of land which the U.S. had seized from the native populations, but they were giving it away. And there was a lot of immigration, and those two combined things meant you could still change your social class. So Friedrich Trump gets in the hospitality business, locating his establishments where there are a lot of gold miners, and he sells liquor, food, and access to sex.
How did they find their way back east?
So he gets back to New York at a period where Queens is about to get a bridge. And it's about to get very easy to get to Queens, which means all the land is going to have a lot of value. He buys land in Queens right before this big government infrastructure project. And that is hugely beneficial to his real estate business. Friedrich dies of the Spanish flu, and the Trump family did suffer during the Great Depression. Donald's father, Fred Trump, is building houses, but it wasn't until he really learned how to work the system in the mid-1930s and develop political ties that the Trump family business, as we know it, was born.
The Kushners and the Trumps benefited enormously from the New Deal programs of FDR and from institutional racism.
We know the story of what happened. White people were fleeing cities. That flow of population to the suburbs helped the Kushner family, also the Trump family. Fred Trump's real estate projects were what is known in political circles as white ethnic enclaves. It's an active practice in the Trump family to keep black families out. The Justice Department at one point brings suit against Donald and Fred Trump. They settle, but they admit no wrongdoing, but they say, okay, we're actually not going to discriminate going forward. Dubious whether their promise was kept.
Both Charles Kushner, Jared's dad, and Fred were active participants in local Democratic politics. Charlie Kushner, at one point, was New Jersey's top Democratic donor.
Really big money in those days.
So what did they get for that money?
First and second generation immigrant families of Holocaust survivors had a group called the Holocaust Builders in New Jersey that made a lot of money but didn't talk about it. Charlie wanted the attention, but he also wanted the government benefits in much the same way that Donald Trump's father, Fred Trump, had sought. When you're in the real estate business, your entire business model depends on government favors. It depends on zoning, perhaps tax givebacks. So it's very important that you cultivate politicians. What was different about Charlie Kushner is he did it so aggressively that he actually got in trouble for it, which
How?
Is a rare thing. Well, Charlie Kushner's older brother Murray objected to the fact that Charlie Kushner was using their corporate accounts to write checks to politicians, to pay for entertainment, things that you're not supposed to pay for from a corporation in America because that is tax evasion. So Murray sued him. A person that notices the lawsuit is the U.S. Attorney of New Jersey at the time.
I'm Christopher Christie. I'm the United States Attorney in the District of New Jersey. The six indictments, including three RICO indictments that were brought today in New Jersey.
He's trying to build his own career as this corruption-busting Republican U.S. attorney. And here comes this case of a Democratic donor doing blatant wrongdoing, and it proves irresistible. Charlie Kushner does what rich people do, hires a white-collar lawyer to make it go away. And the lawyer cannot make it go away. So Charlie decides to take matters into his own hands. He hires a sex worker to entrap his sister's husband, who he also thinks is working against him. And there is an encounter in a motel that Charlie has videotaped. Some months later, he learns that Christie's prosecution is going forward. And he has the videotape sent over to his sister on the eve of her son's engagement party. His sister brought it to the U.S. Attorney's office, and Charlie was subsequently charged with witness tampering, tax evasion, campaign finance violations.
Kushner's high-profile defense attorneys say their client is innocent of the charges.
Everyone knows Mr. Kushner is one of the most successful businessmen in the United States and one of the great philanthropists of this century.
He pleaded guilty in August of 2004.
We talk about tax evasion. The Trumps actually made quite a hobby of this.
So interesting, because in America in the middle of the last century, people believed in paying taxes. FDR said,
taxes, after all, are the dues that we pay for the privilege of membership in an organized society.
People believed that. You can look at the data and you can find there is actually not that much tax evasion, except the Trumps did. Fred Trump, when he wants to get federal mortgages, he says, look how much my property is worth. But when he wants to pay taxes, he says, look how much it's not worth. By the end of his life, he has given over $1 billion to his children, tax-free, including $400 million to his son, Donald.
Mm-hmm. A few times in your book, you have some variation on the phrase, largest fine in XYZ
yes.
commission history. So yeah. Some of the taxpayer money was clawed back.
The Trump Taj Mahal Casino was twice given the largest fine for loose money laundering controls in the history of the U.S. Treasury Department. Twice. Trump, because of a scheme that he developed with Roger Stone, we all know Roger Stone, was given the largest lobbying fine in the history of New York State. But these were business expenses, if you will. They didn't actually deter him from his business practices because they weren't enough. It's like the theory of somebody who wants to drive fast and gets a speeding ticket now and then and understands, okay, I'm going to take that speeding ticket because it means the rest of the time I can drive fast.
So how about the process of reporting this book? You've noted that in the 20 years that you've investigated political corruption, it's become harder and harder to trace.
I cannot overstate what a challenge this reporting project was. There are so many shell companies. Sometimes it's like being in a nightmarish hallway where there's a million closed doors and you think, which one should I go into? It used to be not that hard to cover money in politics because people would disclose their donations somewhere. You could find the numbers and line them up with maybe a contract or some other government benefit. What's happening now is money pours into government through dark money committees, super PACs. It's sanctioned by the U.S. Supreme Court that you don't really have to say how money is getting into elections. You can spend a year figuring out, as some people have done, who was behind the LLC that gave $1 million to the Trump inaugural committee. One of the reasons why we have set up the collaboration that we have in our podcast, Trump Inc., is because it's a force multiplier. The Trump Inc. podcast is a collaboration of WNYC and ProPublica, but we've worked with a lot of journalists. We've worked with The New Yorker, The Washington Post, Bloomberg, Times, Forbes.
And listeners.
Citizen journalists, tipsters. There is so much to look at. And one of the things I found is, okay, just read everything. Read every document. Read it at least twice so you retain it. And that is one of the ways to overcome systems that are deliberately designed to keep us from learning about the Trump and Kushner family businesses.
Ray Kushner, who had escaped with her life just barely from the Nazis, from Poland, with the help of some lies strategically designed to mislead immigration services. Ray's children, for one of her birthdays, compiled a book about family lore, The Miracle of Life, and you drew from it a lot in your book. It begins with a quote from Proverbs, "Hear me, my child, the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the teaching of your mother." What lessons did Ray's children and grandchildren ultimately take?
This is the central conflict of the Kushner family. There are a lot of lessons that can be taken from the Holocaust experience. One lesson is flout authority, break rules. That is certainly a lesson that Jared Kushner and his father, Charlie Kushner, have embraced. Jared Kushner had to amend his disclosure forms 40 times. He communicates with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia via WhatsApp and doesn't tell intelligence agencies. So that is one lesson. Don't follow rules. Another lesson is wall yourself off. Don't let anybody in. Kill anybody that is trying to threaten you, because otherwise they'll get you. But there's another set of lessons from the Holocaust. Jared Kushner's grandmother, Ray Kushner, had a very specific warning.
If we're not going to tell now, in 20 years, I don't know who's going to be to tell. And now we have still this strength, and we have the power to do this and to warn the rest of the world to be careful. Who is coming up on top of your government?
And of course, her grandson is on top of a government that is presiding over the most restrictive refugee and immigration policies in generations in many ways. I want to be clear. We are not living in the Holocaust. It was a terrible and unique time in history. But one of the things I learned from The Origins of Totalitarianism by Hannah Arendt was the way the Nazis constantly assaulted the idea of truth, not just what was right and what was wrong, but the idea that they could say one thing and then say another thing and everybody would understand there were lies. You know, there's a connection between eroding a sense that there can be a truth and what is allowable and what can happen.
You quote Hannah Arendt saying, "The result of a consistent and total substitution of lies for factual truth is that the sense by which we take our bearings in the real world is being destroyed." So, Andrea, how did you keep your bearings while reporting this book?
I did rely on the old saws of journalism. Asking, 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 trying to get everybody who could explain something to me, and every document that related to any aspect of the story.
But what about the notion that, it's not so bad. There are worse things. Did you at any point fear that slippery slope?
I mean, yes. And, you know, then also all the people who are sort of, you know, why are you covering this? What's it going to do? But I'm a journalist. There's only one thing I can do, which is to try to document and put something into a story that people will understand. The moment that I stop doing that is when I have given up hope, and I have not given up hope.
It's a really good book, Andrea.
Thank you, Brooke.
Andrea Bernstein is co-host of WNYC's Trump, Inc., and the author of American Oligarchs, The Kushners, The Trumps, and The Marriage of Money and Power. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Micah Loewinger, Leah Fetter, John Hanrahan, and Asta Chaturvedi. We had more help from Anthony Banzi and Eloise Blondio. Our engineers this week were Josh Hahn and Sam Baer. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. Bob Garfield will be back next week. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.